So first of all, big yashikach to everyone for coming. I really, really appreciate it. And it should be a schuss for each and every one of us, for all of our mishpachas, to begin to grow, to grow together, to continue. All right, so let me give you a little bit of a thought of what I think about, what I hope, as Hashem, God willing, for this year to be. Not just for tonight, but just bechlal, to, you know, going forward. You know, many people ask, like, what is chassidus? You know, chassidim ask, what is chassidus? Like, what was the Baal Shem Tov, you know? So let me start with a story. And then from there, we'll be able to begin. You know, there's one of the great, great achronim, one of the great lamdanim of recent generations was the Ksais HaChoshen. Ksais. Big, big tzaddik, big talmid chacham. He was not a chassid by any stretch of the imagination, but he wasn't anti-chassidus either. But he had a good friend who was a chassid, Rav Naftali Rapshitzer. So one day the story goes like this, that the Ksais asked Rav Naftali Rapshitzer, he said, listen to me. I'm a talmid chacham, I know how to learn, you know how to learn. Let's be honest. There's been a lot of tzaddikim, there's been a lot of talmid chacham that have come through history, and they come and they go. What exactly did the Baal Shem Tov do that's different? Like, what's different now that there was a person named the Baal Shem Tov that he came to the world? Okay, so he wrote this Svarim, this Torah from him. Like, what's different? So there are two versions to what Rav Naftali answered. Okay? And that's what I'm going to try to do tonight, is just try to give an explanation to this story, and then we'll take it from there. One version was like this. Rav Naftali answered, he said like this. He said, ever since the Baal Shem Tov came to the world, whenever a Jew does an Avera, it's not as geshmak as it used to be. That's what he said. That was the first response, okay? Fine. The other response that Rav Naftali Rapshitzer supposedly said to the Ksais is like this. He said that what the Baal Shem Tov did is the following thing. He said that there was once, he gave it with a mashal. He said there was once a king, like all good stories go, there was once a king, and this king had a tremendous malchus, a tremendous kingdom, and all the way at the end of his kingdom there was a little town, and this little town was populated by people that were, you know, uncivilized, you know, they didn't know what it meant to be part of such a malchus. And the king wanted them to grow and to develop, to become, you know, people of royal nature, of royal stature. So what the king did is as follows. The king sent a chacham. The king sent a wise person to this town. And the wise person came to the town and he said, you know what type of king you have? You have an unbelievable king. Let me try to describe to you a little bit about his palace, about what goes on in the day-to-day happenings of the kingdom. And this chacham described to the villagers in very, very esoteric terms about the kingdom and about the palace. And the people heard it, but they didn't know what he's talking about, really. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what it means to king. I don't know what it means to palace. Until finally the king sent a second wise man. And the second wise man came to the king, came to the village, and he said, listen, the first wise person came to you, and he described in very vague terms what it means to be a king, what it means to be part of the kingdom, how he's so chashuv. But you didn't really get it. Let me try to give you in more detail. And the guy takes out a blueprint of the castle and describing the grandeur and all the different types of gems and the stones and the different levels and all the different complexity of the palace and so on. Okay, so some of the villagers understood it, some of the villagers appreciated it, but the vast majority didn't really know what he's talking about. Until finally, a third wise person was sent. And this third wise person came to the village and said, listen, guys, I could start talking to you about how great the king is. I could start talking to you describing about how amazing the palace is and how amazing the royalty is. But you guys aren't going to appreciate it. Come with me. I'll take you there. You'll see yourself. So Rav Naftali Rapshitzer told the Ksais, he said, listen to this. He said, listen, Hashem is an amazing king. And the Jewish people are king. We're royalty. But the problem is that it's been so long. We live so far in a flunk corner of the kingdom, we don't know what it means to be royal. We don't know what it means to have a king. We don't know anything. So Hashem sent us a wise person. The wise person Hashem sent us, the first wise person was Rav Shimon bar Yochai. And Rav Shimon bar Yochai talked about unbelievable big things in the Zohar and Kabbalah. But you know what? The Jewish people, we don't know what it's talking about. It doesn't make any sense to us. It doesn't resonate. Until Hashem sent a second wise person. And the second wise person was the Arizal. And the Rizal came and said, listen, Rav Shimon bar Yochai talked about the kingdom and big things, but you guys didn't appreciate it. It's hard to understand what he's talking about. Let me explain to you in more graphic detail. And he comes with blueprints and describing in specifics what exactly is going on in the kingdom, what's going on in the palace, what is a mitzvah, and so on. So some people get it, some people don't. Until the Baal Shem Tov came to the world, the Baal Shem Tov said, listen, let me take you by your hand and I'll show you the palace myself. That's what Chassidus is. What Chassidus is showing the Jewish people what truly is Shabbos, what truly is tzitzis, what truly is Shabbos candles, what's truly a Jew, what's truly kibraveim, what's truly v'haftu racha kamoicha. You see, I have to be honest with you guys. Everyone here, we've been, for no fault of any particular educational system, but we've been dealt the short end of the straw. We haven't been given a full picture of what Yiddishkeit is. Each and every one of us, we've been taught what it looks like to keep Shabbos. We've been taught what it looks like to daven. We've been taught what it looks like to put on tefillin. We've been taught what it looks like to eat kosher. But none of us have been taught, and none of us have been educated, unfortunately, and we haven't been shown what really is happening when you put on tefillin, what truly is tefillin, what is Shabbos, what is kashrus. So let me explain. When Hashem Yisbarach, and this is what I want tonight to be, just for a little bit, this is not going to be a whole lengthy discussion. Tonight, I just want to give a little bit of a historical perspective of what Chassidus is, what the Baal Shem Tov came to the world, what's the Chiddush of Chassidus, and to put Chassidus into sort of a bigger picture of Yiddishkeit, you know. And to answer that question, a little bit of what is Chassidus? What does it mean to be a Chassid? To have long peis? To cover your hair with, you know, five different coverings? That's what it means to be a Chassid. Like, what does that mean? What is Chassidus? So I want to try tonight just to give a little bit of a background, a little bit of a history of what, of the world that the Baal Shem Tov came into, and what he brings to the world, and how what he taught and resonates with us in a very, very extreme way, Baruch Hashem. And then, Bez Hashem, what I want this year to become is the following. I want to go through different sugyas and different topics in Chassidus, different topics in Yiddishkeit and Avodas Hashem that is deepened and given unbelievable flavor and depth with Chassidus. And I want this to be practical. I want this to be real avoda. So we'll go through sugyas about Amunah, sugyas about Bitachin, Inyanim about Tzadikim, things about davening, about Shabbos, about learning Torah, and we'll learn the concepts of it. We'll learn about, instead of just learning about what words to say when you daven, but what truly is davening. I want it to be practical. We'll take into avoda halacha lemaisa. We'll come out hopefully with real avodas to come out of it. And hopefully it'll be something that we can really become changed by. And Bez Hashem, again, just to sort of lay out what my vision is, hopefully, with God's help, when we go through enough of these basic sugyas and general topics in Yiddishkeit, hopefully with a depth to it and to be changed and to have it changed by our learning and through our learning. So then what I think would be nice also then to go through Sfarim and to go through different tzaddikim, to go through some of the biographies of the tzaddikim, different Sfarim that they wrote, to get some of the themes, some of the basic principles and concepts that run through different Sfarim, and we'll sort of get a real good education of Chassidus and become changed by it. That's the hope, at least. That's the hope. All right, so let me, and by the way, if there's any questions, I want this a little bit, it's a little bit of a larger crowd, but I want it to be interactive. So if guys and anyone has a question or needs something to be further explained, then please let me know. Okay, so let me give you a little bit of a historical background. Going from Har Sinai, okay, there's a certain history of Torah and of Yiddishkeit that unfortunately most of us don't know. And we're partially not aware of. We were never taught it in yeshiva. And this is something we have to fill in the blanks. And it gives an entirely different picture of what Yiddishkeit was. And awfully is. When the Rabbanu Shalom came on Har Sinai and gave us the Torah. So we're all familiar with half of what he gave us. What we know by Har Sinai, the Rabbanu Shalom gave us the Torah. And that means he gave us the mitzvah of Shabbos. He gave us the mitzvah of kashrus, of tefillah. And so he told us what to do. And how to function as Jews, how to function as religious Jews. But the truth is, the Sfarim, the tradition is as follows, that at the same time when the Rabbanu Shalom gave us on Har Sinai, the mitzvah of, for example, Shabbos, the Rabbanu Shalom also gave us along with that, not just the details about what Shabbos looks like or how to keep Shabbos practically, the 39 Malachas, he also gave with the Halachas, and Moshe Rabbeinu gave this over to every single Jew. He gave over to every single Yid, not just what Shabbos looks like, but the experience, the depth, what's happening when a Jew keeps Shabbos. Now, the general term for this whole side of Yiddishkeit, of not just what is Shabbos, not only what Shabbos looks like, how to be a Shomer Shabbos Yid, but what's happening when you keep Shabbos, what truly is Shabbos, for example. This is called Pnimis HaTorah. That's called Kabbalah. That's called Kabbalah. Now, in general, Pnimis HaTorah, and again, this is a little bit of a necessary background in order to appreciate Chassidus and what the Baal Shem Tov did. When it comes to Pnimis HaTorah, there's two different sides to Pnimis HaTorah. There's two different sides to Kabbalah. And again, we're not learning Kabbalah here. That's not the objective of here, but a little bit of a background of that side of Yiddishkeit, because it is necessary. Kabbalah is divided into two parts. There's what's called Maisa Bereishis, workings of creation, and there's what's called Maisa Merkava, the workings of the chariot. What does that mean? So very simple. Very simple. Just a simple mashal to it. You can have a person that, you know, is a mechanic. Right, if a mechanic. So the mechanic knows in great detail, and he's very, he knows intimately how a car works. He knows every single piece of the engine. He could take it apart, put it back together again. He knows very, 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 very well what a car is, how it works, how it functions. But it could be this guy never actually drove a car. And then you have another person. The other person is a race car driver. This guy knows how to drive a car exceptionally well. But if you gave him a spark plug, he wouldn't know a spark plug from a, I don't even know, another part of the engine. I don't know, some other part of the engine. Bachal doesn't know anything about how the car works. He knows how to drive it. A really, really good car guy knows how to drive a car well, and he also knows how to take apart and put the engine back together. When it comes to Pnimis HaTorah, when it comes to truly experiencing Shabbos, or truly experiencing tefillin, or truly experiencing loving another Jew and caring for another Jew, to truly experience an act of tzedakah, Pnimis HaTorah introduces us to what truly is a mitzvah. Not how to do the mitzvah, but what is the mitzvah. And there's two parts to that. There's one part which is called Maisa Bereishis, the workings of creation, which means to know, to understand what's happening when I put on tzitzis. What's happening when I give tzedakah? What's being changed in the entire infrastructure of the spiritual world? What's being activated within my soul? What's being activated within God? What's happening when you do a mitzvah? That's an entire side of Yiddishkeit. And then at the same time, there was a different discipline called the Maisim Rekava, workings of the chariot. What does that mean? It means to actually feel it and to actually experience it. Now, sometimes a person can experience a mitzvah and can experience a side of Yiddishkeit or something in Ruchni, something in spirituality, that they might not necessarily be able to articulate and to be able to explain with words. But it is an experience. It's like a person driving a car without knowing exactly how the car works. The ideal would be to know how the car works so that you're mentally fully engaged and to also drive the car. By Har Sinai, the Rabbanu Shalom gave us both. With every single mitzvah that was said by Har Sinai, the Rabbanu Shalom gave us not only the knowledge of what's happening when you do that mitzvah, but he gave us the experience he opened that mitzvah up to us. And we literally felt in every fiber of our being, Zachar Siyam HaShabbos L'Kadshim. Not only did we know how to keep Shabbos practically, but that's in terms of halacha. But we also were introduced and given on a silver platter, Pnimis HaTorah, which was to understand what's happening when you keep Shabbos and to actually experience it yourself. This was taught by every single Talmud Chacham, by every single Rebbe, to student from the time of Har Sinai till the end of the first Beis HaMikdash. From Har Sinai till the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, part of the Messiah, part of the tradition of Yiddishkeit was not only for a Rebbe to give over to his students what Yiddishkeit looks like, but to give over to his students what Yiddishkeit truly is. What's happening when you keep Yiddishkeit, and to give the student the ability to experience it themselves. This what was going on, by the way, within the Jewish people at that time, from Har Sinai till the end of the first Beis HaMikdash, there were yeshivas set up. That the yeshivas were set up in such a way, this is what they taught. By the way, the people that were the world experts, not only in halacha, and how to function as a religious Jew, but to the experience of a religious Jew, to experience Yiddishkeit, these were the Nevi'im. What the Nevi'im were the world experts in both Maisa Bereishis and Maisa Merkava, people that understood intimately, how the engine works, and they also understood very intimately what it feels like to drive the car. And this was something that was pervasive amongst our people. The greatest experts in this field were the Nevi'im, but these concepts and these ideas were pervasive. Every single Jew, man, woman, and child understood this, and this is part of their basic education. Not only were, again, as I said, the yeshivas were not just teaching them what halacha was and how to, how to determine what's a kosher animal, what's not. Or what happens when you put a milchik spoon in a fleshik dish and so on and so forth. But they were giving over to the Jewish people and to each student, pnimius. What is happening when you keep kashrus, and what does it feel like truly, and how to open yourself up, how to allow your neshama to truly experience that. These were all the keys that were given over at every single chain in the Messiah. Were given that responsibility of giving over not just the dogma, the practical, but even the mystical and the experiential. That's what's going over. Everything changed with the end of the first Beis Hamikdash. Everything changed with the end of the first Beis Hamikdash. Once the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and again, this is a history that most of us aren't aware of, but once the first Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, this entire side of Yiddishkeit, the experiential, the mystical, was completely, completely, something drastically took place. Something completely changed. Now, what exactly happened with the end of the first Beis Hamikdash? It's difficult to explain. There's a number of things that happened to cause this great shift, but a huge shift took place that from that point on, from the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, from the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash, Yiddishkeit completely shifted. Although you had exceptional people that knew the inner workings of a mitzvah and were sensitive enough to experience that, but they no longer gave that over to each and every one of their students. The way the Gemara puts it, the Gemara tells us that during the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, the decision was made amongst the Chachamim to keep this other side of Yiddishkeit, the more experiential and the mystical, to a specific group of people. Only the greatest and the holiest and the most devout were given the keys to truly experience what is going on in the engine and how to actually drive the car. For the vast majority of the Jewish people, the rest of the people, all we were given was what Shabbos looks like. This was a decision that was made because of certain elements that the Chacham were afraid of, secrets of Torah falling into the wrong hands. But whatever the reason is, this was a decision that was made. And ever since that point of the beginning of the end of the first Beis Hamikdash, the beginning of the second, there has been slowly but surely a decrease in this knowledge, in this understanding of what truly Yiddishkeit is, to the point of where you had huge numbers of Jewish communities not even aware of its existence. So, for example, from the time of the second Beis Hamikdash all the way till the times of Rishon Baruch Hu. Until that time, again, there's been a slow decrease in how many people were knowledgeable of this and how to give it over. It was given over as years went on in a more secretive way. Rishon Baruch Hu comes to the world, and the Chiddush of Rishon Baruch Hu, for whatever reason, was given permission from the Rabbanim Shel Olam to open the floodgates and to return things to the way they were, like it was in the first Beis Hamikdash. So the Zohar Kaddish tells us, for example, that by the time of Rishon Baruch Hu was given permission from Shemayim to be able to speak about these things of Kabbalah and Pnimiyas, not only, again, to give the keys back to the people, to teach even children what's happening when they keep Yiddishkeit, and give them the ability and open their neshama and open their hearts up to truly experience that Yiddishkeit once again. That was a small window that the Rabbanu Shlom allowed open just during the times of Rishon Baruch Hu. After Rishon Baruch Hu is Nifter, which now we're holding after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, the gates are closed again, and we go with the same process of decreasing, to the point of where you get to the time of, let's say, the Rambam, 1000s, where you had a huge, significant portion of the Jewish people that are simply not even aware of this, of the existence of Pnimiyas HaTorah, not even aware of the existence of there being anything beyond just how to keep Shabbos. You follow this? This is what's going on. Again, so the first Beis Hamikdash, the floodgates were open. The Jewish people, every single Jew, knew fully well what was Yiddishkeit. But then again, destruction of the first Beis Hamikdash, it was decided from Hashem and the Jewish people, the Chachamim, that we're only going to allow a select group to know what Yiddishkeit truly is. Comes Rishon Baruch Hu, the floodgates open again, just for a small amount of time, and then the doors are shut. Decreasing until you get to the 1500s. The 1500s, now you have a major change in Jewish history. Okay, this is just a little bit of history background, and then we'll begin learning about Bezeh Hashem. In the 1500s, the Rabbanu Shel Olam begins to try to prepare the world for what's going to be with the coming of Mashiach. Let's understand. The Svar Makdashim explained that this entire phenomenon of the Jewish people, of the world losing sight and losing focus of what Yiddishkeit truly is, and only seeing Yiddishkeit for its surface, that's the definition of exile. That's the definition of Galus. Just as Galus exists within the Jewish people as a body, that we physically are removed from our land and we're in we're in foreign soil and we're not allowed to be ourselves physically. There's such a thing as at the same time that that's happening to the Jewish people, there's such a phenomenon as the exile of Torah itself. What does it mean that Torah goes into Galus? Torah goes into Galus in this phenomenon and the fact that the Torah can't express itself and can't allow us to know, doesn't tell us like what it is. So just as a Jew is in exile and the Jew isn't able to express himself or herself, like, who am I truly? I don't even know myself. I'm an American, I'm also Jewish, but who am I? I don't know. So Torah also goes into exile. And during this entire period, from the end of the first Beis Hamikdash till the 1500s, pretty much, this was the era of a deep exile, both physically for the Jewish people and spiritually speaking as well, where the Jewish people, even in Torah, we didn't know what Yiddishkeit was. We truly didn't know. You had very, very select few individual people. And again, this is we're just talking in general terms. I'm not getting too specific in the history of it, but this is generally what's going on. In the 1500s, the Rabbanu Shalom decided we now have to flip the switch. We now have to begin to prepare the Jewish people and the world at large for the coming of Mashiach, which is obviously going to happen hundreds of years later. But slowly but surely, we have to reintroduce the world to what Yiddishkeit truly is in a way that's not overwhelming. So the Rabbanu Shalom had a neshama. The Rabbanu Shalom had a neshama from the beginning of time that was predestined for this mission, and that was the Arizal. The Arizal, Rabbi Yitzchak Luria, was a neshama that is a chiddush. The Arizal was something different, something new altogether. The Arizal came to the world, and what Rav Shimon Bar Yochai did in a small window, the Arizal blew the doors off of that. What the Arizal did is that the Arizal came to the world and reintroduced the Jewish people from his little corner in Tzfat in the 1500s. He reintroduced to the Jewish people what Yiddishkeit was. And this is what was amazing about what the Arizal did. See, people ask, I guess it's asked all the time because I quote the Arizal a lot. People ask me all the time, like, how do we know that the Arizal was like legit? How do you know? Maybe he was making it up, or maybe there's different people that disagree. I'll tell you the truth. Like, when you learn Arizal, the godliness is so palpable. You sense the truth coming off the page in such a stark way, in such an amazing way. Even the year 2020, you can feel it from the writings of someone from the 1500s. Truth is self-evident. And there's something amazing about what the Arizal did. The Arizal came and gave us, and literally, from within himself, from Eliyahu Navi, from however he understood these things, the Arizal presented to his students the true picture of Yiddishkeit. The Arizal explained what is going on in what is the engine? How does the engine of the world work? What is the spiritual world behind this physical world? What truly is a chair? What truly is a table? What truly is oxygen? What is a Jew? What is a body? What is a husband and wife? I mean, the Arizal explained what is going on behind the scenes. And the Arizal at the same time also explained that, by the way, now that you know what the world is and what life is, and what really is reality, what is the engine, the Arizal then also showed, by the way, every single mitzvah that you do, how every single mitzvah that we do perfectly, to the finest detail, lines up with the depth of what reality is. And the Arizal explained in great detail how what's happening when you give tzedakah, and what part of the neshama are you activating when you give tzedakah, what part of God are you allowing into the world when you give tzedakah, for every single mitzvah like this. Not only did the Arizal explain intellectually how this works, not only did the Arizal explain to his students, intellectually speaking, what is the universe, the spiritual world, what is a soul, and how every mitzvah is in line and activates a particular part of the soul and a particular part of the universe at large, but the Arizal also, with the power of his presence, gave his students the ability to actually experience it themselves. And this is something that we find in the writings of the Arizal very, very often, that the students of the Arizal, just being simply in his presence, they were able to literally experience the words that he said. when the Arizal started talking about Parshas Bo or Parshas Beshalach or some aspect of Yiddishkeit, not only were the students able to understand what he's talking about, but they literally felt themselves moved by it. They literally felt themselves brought into a different dimension because of it. This was something that Arizal brought to the world. And ever since the Arizal came, the possibility of accessing this truth is still there. But the problem is, remember Rabbi Floyd Rabschitzer's mashal. Floyd Rabschitzer said that the king wanted his people to appreciate what it means to be part of the kingdom. And so he sent a wise person. And the wise person gave them unbelievable graphics and details about what the kingdom is like and how the palace looks and the grandeur of the palace and so on. And there was a few individuals in the village that appreciated that. But the vast majority of Jews still didn't chop. So even after the Arizal comes to the world and is very, very nice and people that could understand what he's talking about maybe could appreciate it and be forever changed by such an experience. But the vast majority of Jews have no idea. They can't open his front. They don't know what he's talking about. This is where the Baal Shem Tov comes. The Baal Shem Tov came to the world a couple hundred years later. And like Rav Tzvi Rabschitzer said, the Baal Shem Tov comes to the world and tells the rest of the Jewish people, instead of trying to sort of piece together, you know, what's really behind the scenes. And in order to allow yourself to experience the Yiddishkeit in truth, in the way of the Arizal, you have to sort of have a lot of fasting and break yourself, and you have to sort of transcend physical life. The Baal Shem Tov came to the world and said, you know what? Let's skip all of that. I'm going to take you by your hand, and I'm going to show you the palace itself. And this is the Chiddush of Chassidus. Chassidus is not a particular, you know, type of information that a person, you know, has to learn necessarily. What Chassidus is, what the Baal Shem Tov did, is that he showed, is that everything that Arizal talked about, all the entire side of Yiddishkeit that we never were taught, the entire side of Yiddishkeit that for thousands of years was kept secret, and only the Arizal began to reveal, the Baal Shem Tov said that, by the way, you don't have to go to the Himalayas to find it. The Baal Shem Tov said, you don't have to go, by the way, you don't have to fast and break your body in order to experience that. You don't have to become an angel to experience it. By the time of the Arizal, in his little inner circle, in order to be part of it, his inner circle, you had to be someone that was angelic. You had to be someone that basically barely ever ate, barely ever slept, was someone that was kemat, not in this world. The Baal Shem Tov revealed to the Jewish people a deeper truth, a very deep truth, which is that everything that is going on behind the scenes that the Arizal was talking about exists within each and every one of us. And if you want to know, if you want to experience God, you don't have to travel anywhere else but within yourself. This is the essence of what Chassidus is. And this is, by the way, why Chassidus propels the world that much closer to Mashiach, because the ultimate destination of Mashiach is not to, you know, to take us out of this place. The ultimate goal of Mashiach, the job of Mashiach, what redemption is to reveal that davka in this place, everything was already here. And everything a person needs, everything a Jew needs, was already within their own neshama. And this is the deepest, the most important teaching of Chassidus, which is that a person has to begin to re-educate themselves to sort of reorient our perspective of who we truly are. This is one of the most core principles of Chassidus, which is that when a person says to themselves, who I am blank, the answer is godliness. I am Elikus, I'm a piece of the divine. That's what Chassidus comes to bring. And when a person begins to think of themselves in such a way and begin to realize that all the deficiencies that maybe they have and all their shortcomings is not essential to who they are, it's not their deepest identity, then that gives a person a very strong foothold and a very strong, solid place of confidence to be able to grapple with the issues that they have to deal with. This is the core essence of what Chassidus is. What Chassidus comes to is to give the Jewish people the ability to answer that question of what is Shabbos. Not only to intellectually answer the question of what is Shabbos, but to give us the ability to truly experience Shabbos itself. And this is what Chassidus is. What Chassidus tells you is that Shabbos is not just something that exists out there. Shabbos, there's a part of your neshama that's called Shabbos. Chassidus says there's a part of your neshama that's called kashrus. There's a part of your neshama that's called kibra vein. There's a part of your neshama that's called learning Torah. And learning Torah and keeping Shabbos and all that stuff, it's just opening yourself up. It's rediscovering who you already were. That's what Chassidus says. So Chassidus, therefore, there's a lot of learning in Chassidus, of figuring out the engine of Torah, but it's all in a way that's packaged within the self. It's all packaged within the person. Of when you learn about the engine of what is Shabbos, it's learning about yourself. And when you then try to figure out how to experience Shabbos, in truth, you're trying to figure out how to experience yourself and how to discover that part of yourself which is now alive and well. That's what Chassidus is. And therefore, Chassidus is something that changes everything. This is why, Ramaftali Rabshitzer, the first version of the story, Ramaftali said to the Tzais, he said that the Baal Shem Tov came to the world. Ever since the Baal Shem Tov came, an Aveira is not as geshmak as it used to be. You know why? Because after the Baal Shem Tov comes to the world and the Jew is told and shown who we truly are, it's impossible to allow yourself to truly enjoy an Aveira. Because you can't. Because, because this act that happens to be sinful is not in line with my inner identity. It's not who I am. So I can't even allow myself to truly enjoy it. And that's the gift of Chassidus. The gift of Chassidus is to realize who we really are. And to appreciate that and to begin to learn that. So that's what's going to be the goal of this shiur. And again, tonight was really just a couple more minutes, an introduction to what Chassidus is and what we want to accomplish. What we want to accomplish, Bez Hashem, over Wednesday nights, is to be able to learn what Shabbos is, to learn about what Emunah is, to learn about what Bitachon is, to learn about what learning Torah is, to learn about what Tzedakah is. But when we learn about these things, we're not just learning about how to do it. We're learning about what part of the soul is bound to Emunah. What part of the Neshama, what part of ourselves is learning Torah? What part of ourselves is giving Tzedakah? And then we'll also, Bez Hashem, be able to learn techniques about how to open ourselves up to truly experience that. Not just to learn about the ideas of Emunah, where Emunah comes from, but to be able to learn and to truly guide us to figure out how to feel Emunah, how to live Emunah, how to experience Yiddishkeit in such a way. So just for a few more minutes, and then about 9:30, if we have a minute for Meir, if we could dive in Meir. So, I don't know if there's enough copies, but if you guys want to share, this is just a copy from a sefer by one of the tzaddikim of nowadays, Ramatel Zilber from Borough Park, from the Sechina Rebbe. So, this is part of a shir that he gave. It's a vah that he gives. That I think he gave on Mesilas Yesharim. So, the page that you have in front of you is just a little bit of a snippet of what Chassidus does to a person. So, just we'll go through just a little bit inside, not the whole thing. You see on the right side, Chassidus Higdila V'Raymeim Es Asagas Adam Avodas Hashem. What Chassidus does is Chassidus broadens one's horizons in terms of serving God. He says like this: Aideya Chassidus, through learning Chassidus, Kiblu Hasagas Acheres V'Nalis B'Yaiser B'Kol Inyan Hatar V'Avoda. The Jewish people through Chassidus were given bigger vistas, bigger horizons of what Yiddishkeit can be, of what we can become. He says, "Ki Chassidus harima es asagas ves ha standard shel avodas Hashem." Chassidus raises the standard of what Yiddishkeit's about, of what we can become. Very often, we're so taught over and over again from the time that we're little kids the concept of Yoridus Hadoris. The generations get worse and get worse and get worse, and we're farther and farther away from our Sinai. And that's whenever a person learns Gemara, Yoridus Hadoris smacks you on the face. You know what I'm saying? Because you're learning Rashi, and it becomes very clear to you right away that Rashi is much bigger than you. Just the way it is, right? But what Chassidus comes to introduce us is to a different truth. Is that at the same time, in a certain sense, superficially there's been a Yerida in terms of our ability to understand Torah, in terms of the body of Torah, what Shabbos looks like, that has been a diminishment. But in terms of the inner working of the soul, it's quite the opposite. Ever since the 1500s, from the Arizal, there's been an increase in that. And we're moving farther away from Har Sinai, but closer to Mashiach. And so Chassidus, the Baal Shem Tov, comes and says, you know what a Jew is? Before the Baal Shem Tov, put it this way, before the Baal Shem Tov, you could get a Rav or a Magid Shir or a Shiva darshaning and getting all like fiery and passionate about loving God. And you could get a Rav and Rosh Hashiva and a Baal Darshan to get all fiery and passionate about loving Torah. But before the Baal Shem Tov, you could not get a Rav up there and a Baal Darshan getting fiery and passionate about loving another Jew. Loving another Jew is just something that, it's been adon l'chaveiro. You have to treat each other nice because you want to be treated, badly yourself. The Baal Shem Tov came to the world and said, as passionate and fire a Jew has to be about loving God and loving Torah, you have to be passionate about loving another Jew. Because you know what a Jew is? A Jew is a piece of God himself. A Jew is a shtick of a kus. A Jew is a piece of divinity. And so that changes everything. So if you see yourself as a piece of divinity, if you see yourself as that my neshama is Torah itself, my neshama is Yiddishkeit, and everything that I'm doing in Yiddishkeit is just simply unearthing what I already have within me and who I truly am, then the sky's the limit. Then why hold ourselves to the line of like, okay, I'm Shomer Shabbos. Like, why is that, you know, why should that satisfy us? So Chassidus raises the standard of Yiddishkeit. V'nitin l'dama zayis b'derech mashal. He says, let's give a simple mashal to explain this. Sheinu b'medina seinu, in our country, in America. Hisragalnu lichyoisim kameh v'kameh kelim u'machshirim. We've grown accustomed to living with a lot of technologies, much machinery. V'rehitim shaynim, different technologies. L'nuchyois u'ravachas v'anashim, to allow us to live in a more comfortable way. And the more we grow accustomed with these technologies, the more they become standard. And to the point of where you can't even imagine living without it, right? So he gives an example. If you have these basic machineries and technologies in your home, that's called a normal home. And everyone feels that these things are necessary. You need them now. And you cannot function without them. But now, if you travel to a poor country, Eastern Europe or places like that, third world countries, you'll see, they're not accustomed to these technologies and to these advances. And the standard that they live by is much less. That's the Metzias. So Ramatel says a personal example. He says, for example, in the previous generation, most people didn't have the following technology in their home. People had rickety chairs, a simple wooden table. They would live in simple houses with wooden floors. Baruch Hashem, nowadays, the horizons have risen tenfold. Things that are now necessary and demanded in order to have a normal house. There was a point where standard was just bread to eat and food, you know, and water to drink, and that's it. People were happy, were satisfied with that. They were happy and they were satisfied. But nowadays, we all know we need more than that. We can't function. We simply can't function without these technologies and these advances. These technologies have risen the standard of life. So for example, Shabi Aldusi says, Ramatel says, in my youth, there was no such thing. People didn't have laundry machines in their homes. It wasn't like that. Nowadays, everyone has a washing machine and so on. That's normal. That's standard. So the usual shir, the next paragraph is, and therefore it's terrible, and we have to go back to the way it was, and we're all just getting too comfortable, and so on. Ramat is saying, that's not true. That's not true. The Rabbanu Shalom wants us to be advanced. The Rabbanu Shalom wants us to raise our standards of living. But the trick is not only to raise your standards of living in Gashmias, but to raise your standards of living in Ruchnias. That just as we're not satisfied with living without a washing machine, and maybe some of us are not satisfied with living without two cars, and people are not satisfied without having, you know, X amount of floors in their home, those same people that hold themselves to have such high standards in Gashmias have to hold themselves to high standards in Ruchnias too. And you can with the coming of the Baal Shem Tov. Since the Baal Shem Tov came to the world, instead of thinking yourself as just a piece of Gashmias and something that's basically broken, that needs to be fixed, and damned to hell and needs to be saved, well, the Baal Shem Tov came to the world and said, it's quite the opposite. You have a chelek in Olam Haba, you are a piece of Olam Haba. Just live up to it. Just live up to it. By the way, this is very timely in the month that we're in, the month of Shvat. See, the month of Shvat is shining with the Yontav of Tu B'Shvat, yeah? I don't want to start going in, I'm going to keep on going, but just very, 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 very quickly, you know, they don't mind, okay, there you go. So the month, what's the meaning of Tu B'Shvat? We celebrate fruit. What does it mean to celebrate fruit? What does that mean? Rosh Hashanah L'Ilanah, so the trees should celebrate Tu B'Shvat. What do we have to do Tu B'Shvat? you know, every day whenever you drink a cup of water and you make a bracha achrayna, so you say bar nefashis rabbis v'chasrayna. So you say, Rabbanu Shalom, we thank you for creating nefashis rabbis, a lot of you, you know, people and so on, v'chasrayna, and things that we need. Things that we need, things that we absolutely need. And I'll call Mashav Rasal Hachias with Nefesh Gochai. And besides the things that we absolutely need, we also thank you for the things that we don't really need, but it really, but they're very geschmack. The Beis Yosef writes, what are these two things? So Beis Yosef says, what do we really need? Bread and water. That's what we need. What does Hashem give us that we don't really need, but it's really geschmack? Fruit. Fruit. When we're celebrating Tu B'Shvat, the month of Shvat is the month that celebrates the Jewish people's the fact that Rabbanu Shalom gave us fruit. You know what that means? It means that Rabbanu Shalom wants us to serve him a Yiddishkeit that's beyond bread and water. What does it mean, bread and water? What does it mean to serve Hashem in a way of bread and water? It means, Rabbanu Shalom, let me just know what I need to know. What you need to know? You need to know how to keep Shabbos. You need to know how to put on tefillin. You need to know how to keep a kosher home. That's what you need to know. Do you need to know what's happening when you keep Shabbos? Do you need to truly experience Shabbos? No, you don't need it. But Hashem is offering you on a silver platter the fruits of this world. And when Hashem creates the fruit trees, Hashem is saying that of course you don't need it, but Hashem wants you to enjoy life. Hashem wants us to enjoy life. Hashem wants us to raise our standards of living. Do you need to? You don't need to. But it's Rachmanis if you don't. Hashem created all the fruit trees and all the delicacies of this world for us to enjoy it. So why not raise our standards? Why not get us to a point of where we need these things? But not just to do that in Gashmius, to do it in Ruchnius too. In other words, to create within ourselves an Avodah that's serving Hashem with like bread and water, which is to learn about what we need to know, but to also serve Hashem with fruits, which means to engage ourselves in a Yiddishkeit that we don't necessarily need, but it's unbelievably meaningful and significant and makes Yiddishkeit beautiful and delicious. That's what Chassidus is. Chassidus reintroduces us to the fruit of Yiddishkeit. It's not the bread and water. Shas and Shulchan Aruch, that's all you need for the bread and water. But if you want to truly enjoy the Yiddishkeit that you're learning about, if you want to enjoy the meal, you need some fruit. You need something that's sweet. And that's what Chassidus says, that's what Pnimius HaTorah is. So he goes on to say, K'maykein, so too tzarech ladas, a person therefore has to know, Shagam beruchnias, yicholim l'kfaya standard, ma'yiyu hasogis b'avodas Hashem. A person therefore has to know and take responsibility in their lives to raise the standard of their Yiddishkeit. And when a person raises the standard, then that becomes necessary. That becomes necessary. What's considered normal and acceptable, sheyev shabbat, that I cannot live without. So a person says, the next column, he says, Ma'u haderech ha-rogel, keitzat tzrich lihiroi Shabbos kodesh. Person thinks to themselves, what is my Shabbos supposed to look like? What is my standard already? And what could I do to make to raise the bar of that Shabbos? Therefore, a person can say, the Chassidus came and raised up the standard of Yiddishkeit. It opened the horizons of what we're capable of. The Kavim Echadish as a standard, it reevaluated for the Jewish people what the basic standards of Avodas Hashem should be. And all things that are related to the service of God. That's what a person has to say. So he gives one simple example, and again, I apologize. Bez Hashem, I'm going to try to keep this year usually, you know, to 9:30. But let's just finish off. He says, "Venuch letzair latzmenu." So let's give one simple example. Shemizgar loy eza chassid bayar katana. Let's say you have a real chassid, never Hashem, not pays and beard necessarily, but a real chassid. He happens to live in a certain city. V'dizdamele lispal by Hashanah Rabbah beis haKnesset Seiraini, and happens to be when Hashanah Rabbah comes, and he happens to find himself in a different city, in a city Yachin and Kolad Balabatim Hapshutim, with simple Jews that are not big Oivdim, they're not Mevakshei Hashem, simple. V'nihem Mekayim Meschaveh Seim Derech Pashut. So when this guy who's on fire with Yiddishkeit, and his standard, what's his Hashanah Rabbah? What's his standard? His standard Hashanah Rabbah is with davening, with crying, with bechias. You know, and then he goes to another shul, and their standard Hashanah Rabbah is the standard Hashanah Rabbah. Standard Hashanah Rabbah. When I was in Eretz Yisrael for Sukkot, so I went to Rav Shmaya Morgenstern. I went to Rav Shmaya just to see his Hashanahs. His Hashanahs. How long does it take to shake Luv and Esrog? What's our standard? 2 minutes. Like, how long does it take to shake already? Right. Rav Shmaya was shaking Luv and Esrog with tears and igunim an hour and 45 minutes. That's his standard. That's his standard. So you're going to say, why? So, okay, that's Rav Shmaya. Okay, it is Rav Shmaya. But Lamanigara, so he tasted of the fruit of Nanua. He tasted the delicious fruit of Sheikh Mulvin Esri. We never tasted it. So to us, it's just in excess. It's unnecessary. But when a person is given the taste of, when you taste what it means to Sheikh Mulvin Esri, then the standard is an hour and 45 minutes. This is standard. So this guy comes to Aishana Rabbah, to the average shul, and says, it's Aishana Rabbah. It's a day, okay, Davin's a little longer. And the guy's thinking to himself, that's Aishana Rabbah. It's not Aishana Rabbah at all. Difference in standards. It's all a matter of have you tasted that fruit. And so our collective tefillah, what we're going to try to do Bez Hashem, Mamish Bez Hashem, strong, is that every sugya we go through, we're going to taste of the fruit of that sugya. And when you taste Amunah, then that becomes standard. It becomes standard. You taste real learning, it becomes standard. You taste the sweetness of loving another Jew, it becomes standard. And then, it's Rahmanis. By the way, I'm setting you up to have a difficult situation, because once you taste the fruit, then you're not going to want to go, it's going to be upsetting if you don't have that constantly. It's going to become standard. But listen, that's the story of being a Yid. The story of being a Yid. Okay, so Bez Hashem, we'll stop with this. And Bez Hashem, the next sugi that we're going to tackle is going to be, what I want to believe, is Amunah Pshuta, simple faith. Simple faith. What does it mean to believe in the Rabbanu Shlalom? Amunah Pshuta. One quick before the chairs move. So, the timing is funny with this. This coming Wednesday night, I'm not going to be here. So we're going to start strong the following Wednesday night with the first sugi of Amunah Pshuta, and it's going to be very, very strong and geshmak, and we'll taste the fruit ourselves. Shkoyach, everybody.